Welcome to the Hospitality Forward podcast with listeners in more than 160 countries worldwide.
My name is Hannah Lee. I am president and founder of Hannah Lee Communications, an award-winning global PR agency specialized in hospitality and travel.
And I'm Michael Ann Stendick, editor-in-chief of Hannah Lee Communications, as well as the award-winning co-author of The Japanese Art of the Cocktail and a food and beverage writer. Helping the community has always been part of our agency's mission. We understand that a lot of business owners, bartenders, chefs, sommeliers, and others might not have the resources to hire a PR agency. We believe everyone has a story to share, so we created our podcast where our listeners can get to know leading reporters and writers and start building relationships.
Each week, these top journalists from around the globe share their practical advice on how hospitality and travel industry professionals can be featured in their stories.
In fact, one of our loyal listeners got featured in the New York Times after listening to our podcast and following our media guest tips. So, you could be next. In addition, we give away a copy of our agency's book, The Japanese Art of the Cocktail, to a listener who shares how our podcast helped them tell their story to the media. Simply email us at hello@hannahleecommunications.com, have Hospitality Forward in the subject line, and share the tip that you learned. And now, on with the show. In this episode, we're delighted to chat with Stinson Carter. Stinson is a freelance contributor to Men's Journal, Fatherly, and Maxim. He also writes for other top outlets that include Wired, Gear Patrol, Esquire, Vanity Fair, The Wall Street Journal, and WSJ Magazine. Stinson covers wine and spirits, travel, tech, cars, and feature profiles from his home base of Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi, Stinson. Welcome to the show.
So great to see you.
Hi. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Stinson, you started as a bartender, eventually slinging drinks at no less than Chateau Marmont in Los Angeles for 12 years or so. So what prompted your transition to journalism?
Well, I went to LA to be a screenwriter, and I still do that. Probably the better part of what I do as a writer is screenwriting. So I just got so tired of spending all this time writing things that no one ever got to see. And I was fortunate enough through the Chateau. I mean, honestly, I traded drinks for assignments at first. And I had a couple of editors from New York, and as editors go, you know, they all want to drink at the Chateau, and they don't necessarily want to pay for their drinks at the Chateau, and I don't blame them. So I got a little job, a 250-word job for a magazine called Black Book, which is no longer in existence, and I wrote the hell out of it. You know, I mean, I treated this thing like it was my senior thesis in college, and I went there and I took diligent notes, and I took it so seriously, and that allowed me to, I became an editor at large for Black Book, and that opened, I got a business card, and I started thinking of myself. And it was sort of in the way that bartending paid for screenwriting, you know, journalism became this other avenue where I could go out and tell a story and meet people and get out of my head and get out of my apartment. And I, you know, my father and my mother both had pasts in journalism, so I came by it fairly naturally. And it was something that, you know, curiosity and asking questions I've always kind of dug since I was, you know, a child. And so it just gave me the opportunity to have an excuse to do what I was already doing. And because I had been at the Chateau, it inoculated me to any of that sort of fangirling, you know, like any of the fame stuff. I was sort of immune to it. And so it was kind of like if I were going to go out and spend the day with Vidal Sassoon, for example, that was a story that I had early on, or Jamie Presley, or people who I'd spend hours with interviewing. I didn't really care because I was about to go into work that evening and have Bono and Daniel Craig sitting at the bar, and I had to be cool and not bat an eye. And so bartending at the Chateau was great practice for being a journalist.
You left LA to live in Charleston, South Carolina, which is one of our favorite cities. So how did your move impact your perspective on journalism and also what you cover?
Yeah, it changed dramatically. I mean, when I was in LA, I was primarily working for the Wall Street Journal magazine, and I did a lot of celebrity profiles, and I did sort of a combination of people in the Hollywood world, but also I would go up frequently to Silicon Valley and interview tech CEOs. And it was a sweet gig because I had a period of a few years where I just sort of, I didn't have to pitch much. You know, I answered the emails and took the jobs and always said yes. But so when I got here, I remember I pitched a story, a Charleston travel story to the Wall Street Journal. And I realized, okay, well, I can't write Charleston travel stories over and over again. You know, what am I going to do? A couple of times they would fly me back to California and then realize, well, that's not very efficient. You know, we're not going to pay to put this guy up and fly him to California. So that's why I started working on, you know, I had bartended for so long that writing about spirits felt like a natural fit. It just became what can come to me. And so it has become, or where can I go and do? So it's become booze, travel, and also sort of cars and gear. But for the purposes of this podcast, I got into writing about spirits and travel because I had to, because I wasn't in LA anymore.
Well, we are big fans of Charleston and the Food and Wine Festival, which we've attended several times. And a couple of our good friends, Sean Muldoon and Jillian Vose, are going to be opening a bar, Hazel and Apple. So we have more reasons to visit the lovely city.
Yeah, so you have to come and experience the bar when it's ready to open.
I've heard of it, and I'm excited to see it when it opens.
Right now, you contribute to many publications, including Men's Journal and Maxim. So what kinds of stories do you write for each one, and how are their audiences different?
I'm always trying to find ways to write about things that interest me personally. With regards to Maxim, I've been writing for that outlet for so long that I have a good bit of freedom to really write about the stuff that I want to do. I have never really written anything for Maxim that was Maxim-y per se. It's always been sort of my own kind of version of, you know, I've gone on strange trips. I've been all over the world driving cars. You know, I've been to Scotland tasting whiskey. I would say that Maxim, Gear Patrol, Men's Journal, these are active outlets that I'm still writing for. I think there's a lot of overlap. I think that they are predominantly male. I think that they are somewhat affluent. I think that they are people that a lot of times are either they don't yet have children, or they have very young families. I wish it was a broader demographic in terms of women and in terms of people of different ages, older people. I certainly do my part and share those stories around to a lot of my friends, but I would say that that's kind of my audience is for sure mainstream. And so I try to take ideas that are more specific from bartenders, from distillers, from blenders, from people, you know, that I find. And I try to find a way to make all of that make sense to a very mainstream audience. I go down the rabbit hole so they don't have to.
So interestingly, you know, you cover quite a range of topics from booze to travel to cars to tech. How do you train yourself to be an expert in each of those areas?
Well, it's sort of a running joke with my wife and I. I call myself the professional amateur because I'm a little bit good at a lot of things. You know, like I can recover a vehicle in off-road driving, and I can do pretty decent photography, and I can, you know, I've been to sniper school, and I'm, you know, had a certification for being a sniper. So the professional amateur joke is that I have to be a little bit good at a lot of different things.
So speaking of stories, we enjoyed reading your fatherly story on how to make the best damn Manhattan you've ever had. And we saw you got some great advice from Joaquin Simo, the bar legend, and Jake Powell of Death & Co. Denver. So for these stories, how do you choose the experts that you quote?
Again, it goes back to the aspect of wanting to write about what you personally want to write about. I just think, who do I want to meet? Like, there are some really cool, inspiring people out there, and it's all selfish. It's just, who are the people that I want to have a conversation with? And I had talked to Toby Cicchini about who I know from way back through a mutual friend, and he brought up Joaquin, and you know, we sort of, that was the only reason I got to, you know, his name came on my radar. And it sort of goes through friends of friends when a name is mentioned. And I think, God, I've heard of that person and they've sort of existed out in the world and I'd like to meet them. I interview people for the most part who I want to learn something from.
Back to Manhattan cocktail. So we think that just like a Negroni, the variations of Manhattan cocktails are limitless. And actually, you know, we are working with our Powers Irish Whiskey client to launch the Manhattan cocktail year-round campaign, which means there are so many bartenders who want to create their own variations to showcase that Manhattan cocktail is not for only nightcap or only winter. You know, you can drink it throughout the season, and there's so many different variations. So, yeah, we are having fun right now looking at these top bartenders nationwide submitting their recipes. So happy to share that with you since you are a fan of Manhattan. But it's fascinating to see the creativity from these bartenders.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because when I talk to these bartenders, I realize that I bartended in a very different era. You know, my general rule for all interviews is if 50% of it is not off the record, it wasn't a very good conversation. And not everybody wants to have that conversation, but the ones who do, those are the best stories. And I try to, if you don't know where the limits are, then you haven't gone far enough. And, it was Wayne Curtis, who's a friend. I know you, he's been on the show.
We love Wayne.
I do too.
One of our heroes.
He's great.
He's such a cool guy.
Mm-hmm. And he was the one who coined the phrase of the transition from head up bartending to head down bartending. And I was a head up bartender and I left as it was transitioning to head down bartending. And some of the best bartenders today understand both worlds. People like Joaquin and Toby Cicchini, they can do both. They can be the head down bartender who makes this, you know, magical drink, but they also understand that human interaction and storytelling and service is very important part of it, if not more important. And so that's the kind of stuff that I like to talk about kind of off the record with these bartenders is where have we come from? Where are we going? And how do we fuse these worlds moving forward so that we can make incredible cocktails and put all this sort of culinary level of focus on what goes into a drink without losing the charm of the experience? Yeah, the hospitality.
Yeah, we call it hospitality 2.0, and it's needed now more than ever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What are some of the other cocktails you're going to be focusing on, you know, in the coming months, and how are you going to choose them?
Well, I'm doing a Sazerac piece because I'm from Louisiana, so I wanted to focus on that just purely because it's kind of a hometown cocktail. And there's another one, the Ramos Gin Fizz. I'd like to kind of maybe do a piece on that. I'm also going to continue to do more bottle focused pieces that are focused on specific spirits as well as cocktail pieces. I've been doing a lot of whiskey coverage for Men's Journal, and I plan to continue doing that. So these are kind of coming in ongoing. And so I usually only know a few weeks out.
As you know, a lot of our listeners are bartenders and also spirits brand owners or marketing directors. So what do they need to do to get on your radar and potentially be quoted in your column or in your upcoming stories?
You know, one of the PR companies that I work with just puts all their client lists, they put their client list in their email signature. So every time I get an email from them, I can see that email signature. They usually bold the ones that they work with personally, and then the other ones are still there. And that's just this reference point that I can have because, and you know, this is another thing that I think Wayne brought up when he was on the show is that I'll get a press release and I'll save it. And 6 months later, a year later, I'll go and do a word search for that because I know, okay, I might go to London. So who else do I like? What hotel that I want to go cover in London? And I'll do a search and I'll find it and I'll say, hey, are you still working on this client? You know, we connected 6 months ago. So having that information, having your client list, you know, in your email signature, that's super helpful. What I like to have is just people empower me and say, here's what I have. Like, these are the clients. This is what I'm working with. Let's try to make something work, you know, just giving me the crayon box and saying, let's figure out what to draw. That's what makes me want to build a story.
As you might know, we have listeners in over 160 countries worldwide. So could you tell us about some upcoming international destination stories that perhaps they could potentially be part of or sources for?
Well, I'm always looking at this, and I'm always trying to put trips together and international destinations together. So I think last week I spoke to Visit Quebec about putting together a trip. I'm a bit of a Francophile. I did an exchange in France when I was in high school and can still speak it. So France is always a destination I'm looking to get back to. I feel the same way about Scotland. I have had conversations lately with folks in Ireland about wanting to get over there. So Scotland and Ireland are always sort of high on the list, as is sort of, you know, Champagne and Cognac and Paris. And Italy as well. I've been sort of wanting to try to do something in Tuscany. And I'll be cliche and throw in Mexico City, but those are the places that are high on my list.
How about upcoming U.S. destination stories?
I have a lot. I'm going to Breckenridge for a week. I'm then going to Sun Valley a few weeks later. And then I'm going to do a Western North Carolina trip and go to highlight a few different kind of high-end destinations in the mountain area of Western North Carolina. I'm probably going to, because it's a short drive for me, I'm going to do a few North Carolina trips this year. And then I'm talking to a few different people about doing an Airstream road trip in Ohio and Michigan. And I'm sort of trying to put that together, as well as Maine this summer. So yeah, those are some of the things that are already in the works, and there, I'm sure other things will come up.
I mean, I would say one of the cities that we think you might want to check out is Knoxville, Tennessee. Their food and drink scene is really strong, but also they have a really incredible Smoky Mountain. So you can enjoy hiking and eating and drinking at a really fun places. So it's one of our favorite cities in the U.S. right now.
Well, that's good to know. You know, it's funny. I have history with Knoxville. My family, an entire wing of my family, moved there from Louisiana in the 80s, and they still live there. So I have been many times as a kid, but I haven't really been much as an adult. So it's probably a place that I need to give another look.
Absolutely.
At. I think that and Chattanooga, both I'm interested in.
Oh, yeah. You'll get inspired when you get to that city and then spend some time with your family and check out some dining scene and drinking scene. That sounds like a really great trip.
Yes, I would love to make it over there. It's not too bad of a drive for me either.
That's perfect.
We can hook you up for sure.
Okay.
So I'm sure you get a lot of invitations to go on press trips, you know, constantly. So how do you choose the ones that you actually attend?
A lot of times, most of the time, it's logistical. You know, it's unfortunate that I will get invitations that are, you know, 3 weeks out and I already have something else that's booked. And that happens a lot. Sometimes it's even less. Sometimes it's 1 week out. Can you go to Sardinia in 7 days, you know, or something like that? And a lot of times it's purely like, okay, well, I just can't, you know, my child has a ballet recital that day and I can't do it. Or it's that I booked something else. If all things are, if it's not logistical, if it's purely looking at the merits of the trip, for me, it's, am I going to have the freedom to, you know, when you see these itineraries, when you see a sample itinerary and it has a section that says, content creation, you know, and it sort of has insert content creation, that always rubs me the wrong way because I just feel like.
What does that mean? Does it mean they expect you to create content for them?
No, that means that there's a point in the, what they mean is this is free time to go and make little videos or use your drone or take pictures or whatever. But it's a strange thing. It always hits me in a weird way because it feels like they're sort of breaking the fourth wall. It's like, you know, we're supposed to be existing in this illusion that we're having this real experience and you're going to write about it. But when you start sort of scheduling in like selfie time, it starts to sort of be a little bit too quid pro quo. You know, we all know that it is, but let's not sort of, you know, underline that. from a journalist's perspective, scheduling in this sort of selfie time content creation, there's probably a better way to phrase that. And I think that if you could take that metaphorically and extend it to other things that you do, like sometimes Talisker Whiskey invited me on a trip to Martha's Vineyard last year that was, I saw it and it was sort of never really a question. It was just like, okay, do I want to fly to Martha's Vineyard and drink Talisker Whiskey on a boat and eat oysters? And it was sort of like, I don't really know how to, I'm not equipped to say no to that. You know, I don't really know how you would say no. And there are a few that I have said no to that I still miss, that I, you know, a Scotland trip last year that I couldn't do. But again, usually the ones that I say yes to are just, it's logistically okay. I've got the time for it. And it just feels like the biggest thing is, does it feel like it's a real experience, or does it feel like they're putting me on rails at It's a Small World and telling me to like take out my camera and just like create content for them?
Now that's a great tip. So speaking of tips, what practical do's and don'ts could you share with our listeners when they decide to pitch their stories to you?
It has already been well stated that the national whatever day, those things always just sort of, I barely open them, you know, because I think the biggest thing is being aware of what a journalist is actually going through in terms of their backlog on a daily basis. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm working, I have a list of probably 10 to 15 stories that I have to write, and I have to tackle them in that order. And, you know, these are things that are months old. And when I get an email that says, hey, you know, can you do an announcement piece on this thing that's coming out on Tuesday? It's not that I don't like this thing. It's just that it can't fit into the workflow on a time frame that's going to work for me or for you. The other thing I would say is, this is a pet peeve of mine, that I get these emails that say, hey, I just noticed that you wrote this piece about port. I represent this great port. Would you mind amending your piece so that you can add our port into it? I'm happy to send you a bottle of it. And it's sort of like it shows a sort of lack of understanding of the relationship that I have with my editors, where once a story ships, I'm only going to want to pester them with that if there's a correction that is a correction of fact, you know, that is something that like we have to change this because it is not factual. And I make those happen all the time. I always do quickly, and they're responsive to it. But when it comes to a correction of just like content addition, it's a lot to sort of that. I feel a little bit icky when I get that email, because I'm like, I don't know if you really understand what I'm doing here and the relationships that I have with my editors, and how that would sort of strain both our relationship as PR person and writer, and also my relationship with my editor. So that's one of the don'ts.
You know what, actually, I think we totally agree and also understand where you're coming from. But I think, you know, there's some journalists actually open to that ideas, and they are always updating their roundup stories. So I think maybe, you know, they might have to do a little more individual homework and understanding who you are as an individual and understand your practice and honoring it. That's more important.
Yeah, I would say that with regards to that, there are cases, you know, there's a way to phrase that, which is Men's Journal, for example, they like me to update a lot of these and Wired will do this with tech, things that are on a cycle that is often changing and being outdated. I do updates for those types of stories. And so lately I've been doing a lot of watch story updates for Men's Journal, where I did best of 2023 and they want best of 2024. I think the way to phrase that from a PR or brand perspective is to say, hey, I just saw that you wrote the story that was relevant for me. Should you choose to do an update to that, I would like to sort of float this as an option. And that way it's sort of like, that's the one that I would take and say, all right, I'll file that away. And when I get an email from the editor saying, hey, we'd really like to update this piece for 2024, then I already have a running sort of list that I've got at the ready.
A little finesse goes a long way.
Exactly.
Yes.
So moving on to our awesome bartenders. So a lot of bartenders are great writers. So for those who want to get into journalism, what kinds of practical tips would you offer?
Well, I don't think there's ever been a better time for bartenders to cross over into journalism because, you know, it used to be that being a journalist is what equipped you to tell a certain story, that you were sort of known as someone who was universally curious and asked questions and did research. And now a lot of editors want me to write within the context of a story. Why should you trust me? And that means that I'm not just a journalist. I have to say, why specifically do I have personal earned expertise in this field? And for me, it's sort of, I can do that with bartending. I can do that with cocktails. Even though I'm relying on other people's expertise for these stories, it's the context of why you should trust me. That never existed before. That's sort of a new thing. And I think that because of that, there has never been a better time for someone who is actually doing this to write about it, because that credential is baked into that equation. So if you are a bartender and if you want to tell a story, you know, I think that, you know, probably the best way to start doing it is with social media. But if there's an outlet that you want to write for, I feel like there is an appetite for that. Editors are looking for that degree of authenticity. And I think there's a lot of appetite for that.
Speaking of social media, we all know the power of it. So what platforms in particular do you find the most helpful for doing research, discovering story ideas, and even identifying sources?
Definitely Instagram. I don't really use Twitter anymore, or whatever it is now, X. I guess Facebook, you know, I'm still there occasionally, but for the most part, it's Instagram first, LinkedIn second, because LinkedIn, I feel like it's a place where I can really connect with. Now, it's interesting because I can tolerate pitches on Instagram. I do get weirded out when I get like emails on LinkedIn. It's a little bit more invasive, but I love the fact that I keep up with a lot of the PR folks that I work with through LinkedIn. And whenever they sign a new client, and they post that, you know, I've had it happen in the last week where, you know, someone who I've been friends with for a long time on LinkedIn, who's in the PR world, posts a new client. I already had that in mind that I wanted to cover that client. One email later, we're talking to the client and we're making something happen. So I would say that for sure, I think that LinkedIn and Instagram are kind of the most important for me at the moment.
What about YouTube?
I use YouTube a hell of a lot. I'm not a creator. But as a resource, I spend a lot of time on YouTube, and I think that it is an element of research for me.
So looking ahead, what destinations are you on your bucket list to visit and why?
Well, I'm always interested in getting back to Scotland, Ireland. I've never had a bad time in Scotland. I've been a few times. I love it there. So that's always on the list. I want to go to Quebec because I want to enjoy their food and their spirits. There's a lot happening with the Canadian whiskey industry that I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about in the coming years. So Quebec, I'd like to kind of get some connections there. There is a great whiskey writer named Davin DeCurgamo who has helped me out recently on a men's journal piece. And he gave me the sense that there's a lot going on in Canada with the whiskey world that is not reaching the U.S. yet, because they're a few years behind our craft spirits industry. So I think that I'd like to have an excuse to go up to Quebec and Toronto. I think that would be fun. I want to go down to Chile and check out some wine down there. I've spent a bit of time in Argentina, but I really sort of wanted to get back down and do Chile.
So we call our podcast Hospitality Forward since we salute individuals and companies in our industry that are shaping the future of it. So is there a single individual or organization that you'd like to shout out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would probably say that for me, I used to think of PR people as sort of a punchline or a necessary evil. I thought they were sort of like, oh, I have to deal with them as a sort of filter between. It was sort of like something I had to get around to talk to the person I was really wanting to talk to. And I think probably a function of being here in Charleston and needing to have more of a liaison with brands, because I'm not just like going out to a music studio to interview Pharrell Williams, or I'm not going to a movie set. It changed my perception. And I think that these are now people who, a lot of these relationships of people I've been talking to and emailing for years, and we've never even seen each other. Or some of us don't even know the sound of each other's voices. And yet these have become real relationships. That's been the biggest shift for me, has been realizing that there are some real significant relationships that I have enjoyed forming with people in the PR world. The best PR people that I work with understand my need to sort of to go off script when it comes to, you know, they understand the gap between what the brand might be telling them and what I need to sort of make it interesting and to make it feel fun. And they understand that gap.
What is your favorite cocktail and who would you like to share it with and why?
I mean, my favorite cocktail is the simplest kind. You know, my favorite cocktail is, you know, not even a cocktail. It's just a whiskey on the rocks. But I think if I were going to cocktailize that, it would probably be a Manhattan or an old fashioned. Who to share it with? I mean, it would probably be my late father, because I want to talk to him about his grandkids.
Mm. Oh, very sweet.
So Stinson, what cocktail do you see as the next it cocktail?
I get a sense that the kind of blonde Manhattan might be having a moment. I see a lot of things about that. I've also seen a lot of things that were sort of, I don't know the term, but where they're doing kind of filtered, colorless versions of cocktails. That seems to be kind of a trend. But I think that we're going to still keep enjoying some of this sort of canon of classic cocktails, like the Manhattan, like the Negroni. I think these are going to stay in vogue, and they're going to remain kind of in the top spot, because it's sort of an if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
They're classics for a reason.
Exactly. So, Stinson, before we wrap up, what is the best way for our listeners to reach you?
Through my website, I have an email link, so people can email me through my work email through my website. It's just stinsoncarter.com. Also through Instagram at Stinson Carter. And that's also my LinkedIn account. And it's also my website. So it's pretty simple across the board, Stinson Carter.
Like you said, keeping it simple.
Yeah.
Well, Stinson, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
It was a great conversation. So thank you for taking the time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
We're looking forward to seeing you soon.
Hopefully down in Charleston at Hazel App.
Yes.
That would be nice.
Absolutely.
Now that was a fascinating chat with Stinson. Now that you know what Stinson is looking for, please feel free to reach out to him and introduce yourself. And don't forget to mention that you heard him on our Hospitality Forward podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with your friends and colleagues. And be sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your favorite shows. Also, for all media guests to date, you can find their information and episodes on our agency's website, www.annaleecommunications.com.
Until then, join us as we move hospitality forward together.